Staying alive with Rita Steele, thanks to Kraft Homes, Homestar approved practitioners.
Rita Steele.
Hello.
How's it going?
Good. It's been a while. How are you guys going?
It has. But hey, you're a brand new mother.
I am.
How sustainable is that, would you say?
We're going to do two and done, so replacement only.
You never know. One of your kids could be the one that solves all the problems too. So.
Well, yeah. There's definitely an element of oh my god, what have we brought them into?
Yeah.
Because it does feel like there's fires burning and all sorts of chaos going on out there.
Yep.
But no. It's other than that, it's good. So and you guys have had some great guests on. So that's the upside of having me away for a while.
Oh look. Yeah, that is a bonus actually.
Yeah. So. Sick of me rambling on, but
now yeah,
these are your words, by the way,
Rita. There's been a sort of people kicking up some fuss about some native rain tree gardens going in down on Key Street.
Yes.
As part of Auckland's Key Street enhancement construction.
Yes.
What do you know about this, and why do we need rain gardens, and what does a rain garden do?
Okay, so in true me fashion, I am going to take the long route to explain this to you. But the rain gardens are part of sort of a man-made ecosystem service, if you will. And I thought what I'd do is just take a step back and kind of explain the ecosystem service thing. Like we've talked about it a long time ago, but healthy ecosystems or natural ecosystems, what they do is they actually sort of provide these free services which we benefit from. And quite a lot of the time what happens is they're completely unaccounted for when we're looking at development, or they're undervalued. And I'm going to come back to the rain gardens because they're a really good example of this. But just to give you a bit of an idea, ecosystem services are things like provisioning services. So things like we can get seafood from the ocean because the ocean is a functioning ecosystem that supports life. So that's one of the big areas is like provisioning services. The other service that we get from ecosystems is regulation. So things like flood prevention and erosion control. There's also cultural services, so things like recreational, spiritual services that we get from functioning, seeing birds living in these places might make you happy, that kind of thing. And then the last sort of system is support services, so things like nutrient recycling, so for example, the nitrogen cycle. So these rain gardens, which we'll talk about in a minute, sort of they are a man-made version to regulate, so to slow down flood prevention, and also to help with that nutrient cycle. So we'll talk about that a little bit more in a second. The other thing that's worth knowing about ecosystem services is that they, in 1997, the most peer-reviewed and cited scientific published report ever was done by Costanza and Co, or et al, and they actually valued these ecosystem services at $44 trillion in today's money, and that's 2 times the global GDP. So these are really important services that we basically go around and rip out to develop things, and we do it in the name of progress, and for a lot of the part, we may need to do it, or the damage has been done. So for something like Queen Street, you know, that there has not been a functioning natural ecosystem there for a long time. So for us in Auckland, what we did is years and years and years ago, there was a bunch of trees down Queen Street, some wetlands, probably even some mangroves, which their job was to slow down the rainfall and filter the rainfall so it would slowly go out into the harbour. And that's a very important job, as you can imagine. Trees, forests stop and filter 70% of all rainfall. So if you think about the fact that we've now got this additional water coming because there's no trees to capture it.
So the rain garden down on Key Street is essentially to filter out all the crap that's running off the road and whatnot?
Yeah, so what they've done to replace the trees, I guess, is to they dig these giant holes, and for the rain gardens there are 50 of them and 200 trees being installed in those rain gardens. Mm. And basically what they are is giant, you know, essentially they're giant holes in the ground that get that then they plant a lot on top of, and they send all the stormwater into they channel them into these rain gardens, and then the trees then can have the opportunity to filter through their roots and the soil and everything the rainwater, because obviously it hits the concrete, it speeds up because there's nothing to slow it down, and it collects pollutants on the way. So things like
it's mostly tire crap, actually. There's a lot of the pollution that's on them.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Queen Street, I mean, you just walk down, there's everything from vomit from a Friday night to car oil. I don't know, didn't Sephora have something like a whole lot of confetti or something? So there's a whole lot of junk.
Maybe
in
some durries. You know, I've been seeing on the ground a lot more, actually? Vape things. Just like random little bit of extra, like an old vape pod or some shit. And I'm like,
yeah.
I'm having to stop because I'm not used to seeing them. I'm like, what is these little, it looks quite mechanical. It's like a plastic thing. You can see a little bit of metal inside it. So it looks, my magpie self has to stop and have a look.
I haven't seen one yet. Maybe I just am not looking close enough.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty nasty.
You're talking to someone that picks up hair ties, so.
Oh dear. So the water guy, I don't know what to do with that. But hey, good on you for recycling, right?
You did the perfect thing. It was great.
So the water goes in there, it gets filtered, soaked up by the trees. So they're putting trees in there that actually also really like water. And you can do this at home as well. Like if you've got an area that floods quite a bit, you can kind of, you know, channel that water to an area, plant a lot of flaxes, have a lot of scoria, you know, in this kind of pit kind of thing at the very bottom, so it fills up and then the plants can kind of take it up or filter it through. It slows it down as well, so it's not rushing off into the marine environment. So, you know, it does the rain gardens do a really great job. Mm. The issue is that it's a lot cheaper to have just left the original trees there doing their job, but obviously that's not an option for us on Queen Street.
No, it's not real estate. Heard of it?
No, it's not exactly real estate. And also, for some reason, there's this weird thing where they feel like they have to cut down all the trees to do any development as opposed to just building around them. But anyway,
Bunny.
So the problem with these rain gardens, or the controversy, I guess, is that the money to do them has actually come out of Auckland has voted a little while ago to do a targeted rate to improve our water quality, which I go Aucklanders, like I just think that's so awesome that we voted for that, because people don't like spending money, but I think they want to clean the beaches even more, so that's great news. So the money is coming from that, and initially it was going to cost about $6 million, but it actually ended up costing an additional $13 million. So why I brought up the ecosystem services at the beginning of this is because when we look at development, what we look at doing is going the cost-benefit analysis. If we have to rip out these trees, the benefit that we're getting from these trees is worth, in this case, probably $6 million, because that's how much it was going to cost to build these rain gardens to replace them in a man-made world. But actually, it's ended up costing, you know, twice, possibly three times more than that. And that's what we're seeing a lot with a lot of development. So we're undervaluing these kind of ecosystem services.
And it's these costs are getting offset onto the taxpayer.
Yes, absolutely.
So the developers are just laughing at us. That's
absolutely.
So
absolutely.
It's not like an accidental, you know, they know what they're doing, you know.
Yeah, well, a lot of the time they're the ones putting the consultants, like, reports in, you know, and they'll do things like, I mean, we saw it a little bit with Watercare, where they said, oh, there's no Cody, but actually what it was is there's no Cody over a certain size. So they can kind of, you know, with these developments, they can manipulate the reports quite well.
Yep.
And that's what we're seeing with a lot of these developments. And then of course going, oh, you know, it's only worth $6 million, but in this case, you know, because it's taxpayers' money, they don't really care that there's a bit of a blowout. I mean, in the scheme of things, $13 million to improve water quality a slowdown, the rainfall, have some really beautiful natives in the centre city, isn't that, you know, it isn't the end of the world, but it does just go to show that, you know, that that's a huge, like two or three times overspend is a pretty huge blowout, and it means that we definitely, it's just another example of undervaluing these ecosystem services.
Right on. I did just want to add, if you'd kind of sort of wrapped up there, Rita, do you think?
That's the rain garden.
Like okay, good, good. Bang.
I just noticed today that Coca-Cola was once again named the world's largest plastic polluter, everybody, for the second year in a row.
Break free from
plastic are the people who have 72,000 volunteers in 51 countries collecting plastic waste all throughout September. 43% of what they found were clearly marked consumer brands. Coca-Cola was number one with 12,000 Coca-Cola products found in 37 countries across the world. Nestle and PepsiCo were followed. So Pepsi, real close to its old mate. Coke, which is quite nice. Coke was top in Africa and Europe, and in the US, Nestle was the biggest producer of plastic pollution. Solar Cup Company and Starbucks were number twos and three.
Wow.
Heineken was the third largest plastic polluter in Europe, which is interesting.
Wow.
And then there's a blurb from Coca-Cola going, oh, this is what we don't want. We're trying our hardest not to do it, but whatever.
Yeah,
I just think it's important to out these things when you see them, because I don't know if people know about these things.
Yeah, and I don't understand it, because, you know, glass and clean bottles is such a great job creator. And sure, it might cost us a tiny bit more to have Coca-Cola in glass bottles, but, you know, it's a treat anyway. So, you know, if you're going to pay another 10 cents or something,
add it to
really
the sugar tax. Like it. Yeah.
Exactly. It's a great way of implementing a sugar tax without it actually being a sugar tax. You know, it's another way of doing it. So I don't really understand. And also create jobs if you put, you know, one of some of these bottling plants down in the regions, then some great jobs. So, you know, it'd be nice to see some of these companies making some bold moves in that direction. But we will see.
Thanks for calling us from all the way from home, Rita, out there out in the west.
I'm sorry I can't be with you in the studio, but
you
don't want a crying baby in there.
I'm already here, don't worry about it.
Awesome, guys. Well, have a great weekend. Just when you look around, when you're walking around, think about all the ecosystem services that nature is providing. And, you know, they do have a value. They're doing them for free for you too, which is fantastic.
Cheers, Rita. Sure.
See you guys.
Bye.
Bye.
That was Sustaining Alive on 95BFM. Thanks to Kraft Homes, Homestar approved practitioners. Go to krafthomes.co.nz.